Hi, I'm Ben Richardson, and you're listening to the Karate Podcast, where we talk about karate, the competitive sport of Kumite, and the warrior's journey. Brought to you in association with Kumite Coach, the world's first progressive online high-definition coaching platform, created by coaches and fighters for coaches, fighters, and students of karate. Join KumiteCoach.com today and take your karate to the next level. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Karate Podcast. Super excited to have with us today Dan Cuthbert. Dan is a fifth degree black belt in Shitoryu Karate. He's been one of the UK's top competitors, medaling at national, European, and world championship levels. He has competed in the IKU, the WUKF, and the WKF, winning numerous titles. Unfortunately, at 28, he was injured with a detached retina and forced to retire from competition. However, he is now passing on the wealth of his knowledge as the national Kumite coach for Karate England. So, Dan, thanks so much for joining us today. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having us on, man. I really appreciate it. It's good to be here, man.
It's great to have you. So I just want to start off with asking you, what are some of your earliest memories of competing? And was there anything particular that led you into the competition arena?
Mainly just my dad making me do it. And then kind of just being sort of taken to every competition because my dad's club was just going to all of them at the time. But my memory is not as good as my brother's, but my youngest one was memories probably going to Crystal Palace or Sheffield and trying to get a medal because I didn't really win anything big till I was 16, because I was always getting warned or disqualified or something, just because I was a little bit of a wild child in some ways. And I got a lot of second and thirds. I learned a lot. As I tell my students, you win or learn. I learned a hell of a lot as a kid. Plus, all my dad's black belts would beat me up every week. So it was like in class, I couldn't beat them, going to competitions and I'm losing to my mates because it was my friends were the ones that were in class and going competing at the same time. So because we had quite a big club. A lot of memories of trying to beat other kids in my own class at every competition, really. That's kind of like my youngest and best memories, and always losing to one of them. Nick, who's still a friend today, he's teaches for us. Nick Karenick is a great fighter, and dad always says one of the smartest fighters he ever had. And I go, cheers, Dad, but it's funny because he did beat me. We're best mates, but he did beat me. And also some of my friends like Jay Clayton and old Michael Roach and some of my old mates from Roden, because Shikon was a club we was kind of part of UK, but there was Roden and UK were quite good together. I mean, we was a big squad together and we went around everywhere. So I got a lot of respect for Roden and love for them. And we a lot of mates still in it, and still talk to them now, which is good.
Fantastic. One of the things I'm interested in, if it was apparent to you at all, as you moved through the different tiers of competition, did you experience that there were different performance requirements on your part? And how did you cope with those differences?
Well, when I was a kid, if you didn't gack them in the body or face as hard as you could, they said it was too weak. So it's funny, like nowadays, we've got such a different controversial. I remember going home with a fat lip or a black eye and being happy because it was like a little war going to the day. And I was only like 10 or 11 and we'll be laughing. And like, you got a bigger fat lip, I've got a worse eye. And it's like nowadays, it kind of changed. I mean, I don't know when it did, but I was always in the teenager parts, coming second or third, either losing or getting disqualified, because that was my dad just used to have the out me because I got disqualified so many times at some point. And he stopped coaching me for a while because it went from you had to hit him really hard to all of a sudden you couldn't hit him very hard. And then I can't remember what year it was. And then I got a bit older. I think it was more 16, 17. I was 16 when I first won my English title. And I was punched someone to the body, and then the rules changed that if you hit them too hard to the body, they got a point.
Right.
For like, I can't remember what year it was, but I looked at my dad like, this is just a joke, to be fair. But then the rules changing all the time, aren't they? So it's I think I'm glad they're not doing that anymore. But it changed a lot because it went from just sort of trying to stand a gap to your tactics as you got towards your 14, 15 age, movement. Can't just do the same thing against everyone. And that's all I did. All I ever did was just go gack or try and kick him in the head as hard as I could. And then wonder why am I not winning? Because I'm just not. I wasn't doing enough techniques, really, which is what my dad always said, but I didn't always listen to him. So I started listening as I got a bit older.
Did you find that moving from, were you always competing internationally, or did with the stages you went through to get to that level, were there any apparent gaps?
From about 10, we used to go to Sweden, Czech Republic, Poland. My dad always took a big squad to Sweden, like the roading lot, and UK as a chic on. We always had a lot of mat time and stuff out there. Some good times out there, to be fair. France, I've been very lucky because of my dad. I've been able to go to a lot of countries, compete in a lot of places. I remember being 14, going to, I think it was Czech Republic, and fighting this guy, and he just dumped me on the floor. He must have done a bit more judo than I had, and he dumped me on the floor twice on my head, and I managed to beat him in the end. But it was a tough fight, and then I lost in the final to some guy, and I trained all year to go back a year later and beat him, and he smashed him a year later, so it was good. But I remember going there and thinking, God, this isn't like fighting at home. It was I think in some of them countries, Germany, and they loved a bit more contact than some other places. But it's interesting how different countries allow more contact and other places are proper soft on it. Yeah. So especially as it varied a lot, and I didn't quite get that growing up. I was just trying to hit him as hard as I could, and then wonder, why am I getting disqualified? Oh yeah, don't hit him as hard as you can. So it was I wish I listened to my dad a bit more, but he'll even laugh about that now, because me and Luke didn't always listen to my dad, but I wonder why we weren't winning and then losing to my dad's other black belts. Yeah, it was in, I like all different styles of fighting. I always say to people, I'm a student of war. I'm not just a student of karate. I like to do all different styles. So I'm always comparing what's going on with kickboxing and then the karate and then taekwondo and then UFC or MMA or whatever you want to call it. I was not so into it as the younger sort of age, really, because I did it for my dad for quite a lot at the time, and then I was just doing it because I love to fight for a long, long time, and I wasn't even that putting my mind into it too much to make myself any better till I got a bit older and realised, all right, if you actually want to win, you got to start taking this a little bit more seriously and taking a little bit more time to figure out what am I doing right or what am I doing wrong, because I was just doing the same thing, just either left gack or back leg round, as you said, and not really, my fighting didn't evolve at all. And as you get through the gears and through the ages, once you get to like 18, the juniors and then the seniors, that doesn't fly. You start trying, I remember fighting Jason Ledger, trying to kick him, and he nearly punched a hole in me. And then I was like, all right, okay, this is different in the seniors. And it was definitely a wake up call. He probably hit me, probably the second hardest ever been hit. And everyone laughed at me after, why'd you try and kick him? I was like, what do you mean why I try and kick him? I was trying to get a point. There's only one other person that's punched me harder, and that was John Sidorus, one of my dad's old black belts, who's a legend, the guy. John Sidorus punched like a bloody train, mate. He hit so hard. So, yeah, definitely going into the junior to the senior level was I loved it more, I think. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's why I sort of started thinking about it, because I wasn't getting disqualified as much.
Yeah.
And you're allowed to hit them harder, but it kind of like, I woke up, like, this is more like a fight rather than just playing tip-tap when you were a teenager. Yeah. And it was, I think I just enjoyed it a lot more. And I just loved, whether I won or lost, I was just enjoying having to have a fight with someone and not get in trouble. And then not.
So I was just going to ask, because you've obviously moved across associations and different groups of karate, do you feel that competing in those different arenas has added to your wealth of experience and improved you as a fighter overall?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, when I don't think I got to a very good level, or even a good level in my eyes, to be fair, till I was probably about 23, 24, because before that it was, I was fighting in WKF till I was, I think, 18 or 20. And then it was Wuko. When I first left, it was Wuko that we did. It wasn't Wuko. It was Wuko when we first joined them. And I remember going to the first one and I was winning 2-0 or 2-1, and I got my nose broken and it was a really bad break. And I could see it here. And then I was like, oh, I've got to try and fix it. So I pushed it across and I pushed it too far the other side. And I broke my nose 6 times because I should have kept my guard up, as my dad says. And when I looked over to my dad, he could just run his knuckles down it and fix it for me. But it was a bad one. When you can see it and then you push it across the other side, that was a pretty bad one. So going from WKF to, I think it was that was just before then, when you was getting punched. I was punching people on the floor with a body punch, and then they're getting the point. I can't remember what year it was. I'll have to look back, but I couldn't believe that. So I was happy to go and actually get hit in the face, but not. I wasn't happy to get my nose, but it wasn't even a hard kick. It just clicked my nose.
Yeah.
And then after that, I was like, all right, this is where I want to be. This sounds good. This is a new challenge. And yeah, I got to go back and start fighting and trying to hit him harder and harder and harder. I think the difference that we changed was a lot of WKF work on their movement and things and speed. What the change that I sort of found was, right, when I went to WKF, I got to work on more on power, hitting them harder, not trying to just touch them, but trying to sort of follow through because they allowed it more. And then WKO changed to WKF, I think a couple of years later. I wasn't sure how long. I've got it written down somewhere, but I think it was WKO in 2007. And I think 2009 it changed to WKF, and then the rules changed again a little bit. But they always, I don't know what it is about people with karate and competition. They love to change the rules. I don't get it. Just stick to it. Stick to one set of rules and then just leave it. Because I think there was a golden era of rules that is not there anymore. And it allowed like fights to actually happen. And I remember watching like Christoph Pinner fight and watching it being in awe rather than just looking at people playing tag or tap. And I know it can be a bit like that sometimes with karate. That's what my mates that do boxing and MMA, they don't understand. They're like, so you do hit each other on some semi-contact, you can go and do some that is full contact. And they just get confused, my mates. They're like, well, you can't just kick him as hard as you want. I'm like, no, you got it. So I like the rules in WKO and then WKF, and it's still even pretty strong now. We've just come back from Italy and the Europeans a few months ago, and there was loads of contact, which was cool. But I feel like the more videos people have sent me from WKF, I feel like this year they've allowed more contact as well. Mm-hmm. I think since the Olympic thing, I think every time someone sends, because people send me stuff all the time about this WKF fight or WKF fight, or when they send it to me, I'm like, I feel like they're even allowing more contact, which is cool, because I think they should. I think as soon as you get to 18 and you're in the juniors or seniors, you just let them meet each other, make it easier.
Yeah, it would make it easier.
Oh, make it a lot easier.
Do you have any standout moments in your career as a fighter? You know, moments where you just think, wow, that was fantastic, and, you know, what?
Yeah, I think the biggest one has to be when I was in Brazil in the semi-finals in IKU, and I've won that world title there and in the under-75s. And I think I was 3-0 down. A minute and a half to go, and I had two warnings because I'd already tried kicking him a few times. He ducked underneath it, and they, whatever. I can't even remember the exact point, I think. And I looked at my dad like, we've come all the way to Brazil, and I'm going to throw this away. And he was the best Brazilian. He was good. He was getting me with his right stance, left back, and I was trying to get, and he was tying me right. But we trained so hard for it that I didn't lose my head, which was probably the first time I could say that up to that point. My dad said, try change the tactics, rather be on the front foot, try pulling him in. And I managed to nick a point back, and then another one, I got it back to like 3-3 all. And then another one, I got it back to 4-3 in the last, I think it's a 3.5 minute fight, halfway through. And then I managed to kick him in the head and win it. So I got from 3-0 down to 1-0 to 6-3 in a minute, less than a minute. And that was, that still sticks in my brain now. It's like my favorite moment, because I didn't even think I was going to win that, but I didn't want to give up.
Yeah.
But I managed to fight that back. So whenever I'm coaching Luke and my students, I always say, look, if I can come back from 3-0 down in a minute with two warnings, one more warning, I'm disqualified. If I can do that, you don't want to give up the goat. You always want to keep going. So it's as my dad says, be relentless, never give in.
Absolutely. And,
that was probably my favorite moment. And there was another one. I was fighting. Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Got you. You're back.
Can you hear me now? The other one would be winning. The other one would be winning in front of my mum, because my mum didn't watch many times. She was too scared to watch me fight because she didn't like me getting it. So she only watched me a couple of times. And the last time she watched me fight, some guy was doing all this little dancing about. And for whatever reason, I feel like an idiot. It's on. Someone's got a video of it somewhere. I've done like a little dance, span around and punched him in the face. I don't know why. I cannot tell you to this day why. And people thought I was disrespectful and things. And I was like, look, I just felt like I was getting mugged off in front of my mum. And it was like, it was the, yeah, she only watched me what, fight, I think, three times. And yeah, that's probably up there. And then the other one was getting to fight with Luke. I think me and him only got to fight like together once or twice in a team,
Yeah.
which was lovely.
Right.
So yeah, a few little moments and then loads of crazy good moments, mate. But yeah,
Absolutely.
I've enjoyed the whole journey. So I've tried to be very thankful of the life and the opportunities I've been able to get, and everyone I got to fight and lose against, or as well, not just win. I mean, I got to learn a lot because I lost a lot. So people, I'm quite easygoing. I'm quite open-minded in the fact I can say that and not be too worried about it, because I'm a big believer in you've got to have an ego to fight on the mat, but I don't really take my ego with me when I come off the mat. I leave it on the mat.
Yeah.
So I try to make sure I'm humbled for when I teach my students, they're the same thing as well. So
Fantastic. That's great. It's great to hear. Did you prepare specifically for competition in any way that was different to your regular training?
yeah, I mean, my dad's always pushed me. I mean, we've always trained 6, 7 days a week. I mean, my dad just done squad training on Sundays just because we normally fight on Sundays. So we're like, rather than make a Sunday rest day, let's make it the hardest day. So we might do 2, 3, 4 hours on a Sunday training, squad training, some of that, an hour or two just sparring. At the
Yeah.
end of the week, so when we go to competitions, we're fresh on those days because we haven't had 4 hours of training. So mainly for the Brazil, it wasn't the training, it was the rest. As my brother come back from uni that year, and was it the year before, I think, or no, it was that year, I think. And yeah, he just stopped me from doing other things like resting, because I'd train 6 days a week, but I might go out 6 nights a week. Not
Yeah.
that I was drinking heavily every day, but just I wasn't getting the rest in, as he would say. I wouldn't be disciplined on that side of it, and I think that's one of the biggest things I had to learn to. Whilst I was always coming second or third, or not even meddling at the bigger conferences, I was doing all the training, but I weren't doing all the right stuff in
Recovery.
outside the training, recovering and listening and diet. I mean, I wasn't. My diet wasn't great. It was never bad, but it wasn't what it needed to be. And I always fought a bit better at 73 kilos, because rather than 74, 75, because I was a bit quicker. Even though
Yeah.
I felt better at 78. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing is Luke. Luke coming back, even though I was with my dad every day training, it was Luke stopping me from making the silly mistakes after training, and not getting the rest in. And that's what Luke from his football, I think, helped me with his doing that. And also people like, I was very lucky, Vic Charles, and helping me with some of the mindset stuff, because I was putting a lot of pressure on myself all the time, because my dad was my sensei and I was trying to make sure I made him proud in the club. A
Yeah.
lot of the time, a lot of the time, I couldn't let go of the pressure, and it's like that made me make the wrong decision and force some of the techniques. And I think a lot of people struggle with that mind game, and it's for me, he was quite a big factor with it, as well as my dad in helping me. And loads of, I mean, I've been very lucky to train with so many good people over the years, not just me dad, but everyone that helped me along the way. So not being able to put too much pressure on yourself and enjoy the fight. As soon as you enjoy it, I'm enjoying it. I felt so much better, where
Yeah.
I think a lot of people like that, they put the pressure on themselves, whether it's for their sensei or their parents, or just because they want to win so much. They put all the pressure on themselves, then they go out and fight like a muppet. And I think it's a lot of people's problems that they need a little bit more with the mindset and being able to switch it off and enjoy it. And that's why I tell all my kids, the last thing I say to, not just my kids, sorry, even the black belts is that I teach, is look, go and have fun, go and enjoy it. Don't worry, just go and enjoy it and see what happens. And that's always been a big factor in my coaching nowadays that I found helps a lot. So,
Yeah.
definitely mindset and recovery for me was what made the Brazil the difference. Because I think the reason I managed to come back in the last minute was he was getting more tired, but I was getting fitter, because we were training 2, 3 sessions a week, and I never felt fitter than that competition. To be fair, I could have fought for another hour and not worried about being too tired. I was very thankful to my brother and my dad that I'm the lazy one out of the three. I'm the lazy one. My brother's a machine, and my dad's like, he's a machine as well. To be fair, he still trains every day and got a 4-pack, and he's 66.
Nice.
So I thank them both for helping me on that journey. Because without them both, obviously my dad's, I got given pretty much all the credit, but because I'm a product of my dad. But Luke stopping me going out every night was, I still went out. Don't get me wrong, I still went out, just not every night. It was, definitely the other half of it, which is good. So I'm very lucky to have them as my family. Yeah. Very good.
Fantastic. Could we just touch on the time now that where you got injured in your eye, you got a detached retina. What happened there? And what was the consequence of that for your career?
It's a funny, it is a funny story, to be fair, because it's like, it wasn't just from, it wasn't just from one fight. The doctor said it was from like years of it. And I mean, we in some clubs don't do heavy sparring, but we do. I do like light sparring, medium, heavy sparring, whatever you want to call it. Or as we, and you go to, when I go to the boxing gym with the boxers, it's just called fighting. You don't get, I mean, you just go to, I train with my mates all the time that it's a TW1 where I go every Saturday to train with some of my MMA guys. And you go into a boxing, most boxing gyms, it's not sparring, just having a good old fight with them. So he said it was like a build up from years and years and years. But the last fight I had was against this guy called Nuno, he's a Portuguese guy. He beat me 6-0 and he beat me up as well. He was 6 foot, I want to say 6'3", but he might be bigger, but about 120 kilos. He was WKF world champion, apparently. WKF world champion. Okay, he won all the heavyweights champion at some point. And he's a lovely geezer, to be fair. And I just won my weight category, so I went out there a bit too confident. And my dad was going to say, look, he was good. This is what he told me after. I was going to tell me to bounce around and tire him out and just try and nick a point. But I went to war with this geezer and just ran into everything. And it was a good fight. I loved it. But it was, I done my nose. Both my eyes were all swollen and things. And he proper... Wow. Yeah, I shouldn't have. A good big one always beats a good little one, and I was too confident and too cocky that day, and I think that was the last straw. But to be fair, it kind of started from when I was a kid. When my mum, this is the funny bit, I should say, is when I was about 5 or 6, my mum hit me in the face with the door, not like a whole door, but like a like a door handle hit me in the head. Like she, I was behind my room, she sent me to my room because I was naughty or something, and she come flying upstairs. So I was throwing stuff. I was just throwing everything in my room, banging, and then as she come flying for the door, I looked up and the door handle hit me right there. And when I come to, my eye turned in. I had to have an operation to wear glasses because my eye was proper mangled from it. And the doctor reckons that probably started it. And then 20 years of fighting, and not keeping my guard up, and then even at some stupid competitions, letting people that I think they don't kick very hard, I let them kick me in the face a bit, or sparring, let people hit, go and hit me in the face, and then so they couldn't hurt me, and then try and get into the head a little bit. Think looking back, going, what an idiot, what a muppet. So when you're younger, you just feel you're invincible, didn't you? So it's a hard lesson to learn. I wasn't very happy when I obviously got the news. And I still miss fighting to this day. Like, it's like breathing for me. I miss it a lot. And hopefully they can... I've had two ops that they've managed to get 20% of the retina back, but I keep hoping they're going to bring out some sort of new technology. If they get more back, I'll come do the veterans or something and come and... If I get... that's the funny part. I always used to blame my mum as well and used to make her wind her up that she's the reason why I needed glasses. But that's quite mean, to be fair. But probably a combination of a few things, to be fair.
And then that led you into your like a more prominent role as a coach at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I was still training every day now. I mean, I just lost a stone, to be fair, because I was getting too fat, and I had to lose a bit of weight just because when I do 25 classes a week, you're trying to carry the extra weight around. It's hard work, but I'm back down to 78 kilos now. So I can move around and demonstrate things where a lot of the coaches are a bit older. They can't do the kicks or the hooks or the spin kicks or the sweeps. And I think I was only 28 when I was made to retire, so I was still fresh. And I still had the drive. I think that's another thing is I still wanted to help. I kind of sat down. There was a couple of weeks where I didn't know what to do with myself when I found out that I couldn't fight. And I was like, And then Luke was like, can you just do a bit more of me? And I just picked myself up and said, you know what? I can't see it and feel sorry for myself. I just need to get on with it and just like, right, this is what it is. This is my journey. I can't fight. How can I help everybody? So I just started I threw myself into coaching everyone. And to be fair, for 2 years, I didn't do a very good job. I didn't do a very good job at all. I was trying to make everyone fight how I wanted to fight. And it was like, it took me nearly 3 years to kind of realize, okay, no one's I'm me. No, I can't make everyone into me. There was a couple people, like two of my students that thought similar to me. So they were kind of getting what I was getting. And I was frustrated when no one else was.
Yeah.
Why are you not fighting like I'm telling you to? I mean, I'm sure you probably get that with teaching your own students sometimes. You just feel like you're hitting your head against a brick wall sometimes. But I think for 3 years nearly, or maybe even longer, I had to kind of realise that, okay, I've got to make them the best versions of them. Stop trying to make them what I'm trying to make them. And I think that was also putting pressure on myself that, okay, well, my dad's proved that he can have a world champion, Dabakev, Wukev, IKU, all these other things. And it's like, if I was a good fighter, how can I be a good coach? Because, how can I get out of my dad's shadow with coaching as well, not just with fighting? And that was a big mind sort of set for me, was changing, trying to make everybody fight like I used to fight, was making them fight the best version for them, I think. And that was, I kind of have to remind myself about that every year now, because I keep slipping into it sometimes. Yeah. I just like, I like to do what I like to do. And it's like, you got to go and make them. Okay, he needs to sweep because he's this big. He's heavy. He's only got to do that. She's got better footwork. You got to give them what they need. So I try and pride myself on giving each student or each person I'm coaching what they need, rather than what I want them to do, really.
Yeah, and what's it been like being selected as the committee coach for Karate England?
Yes, a complete honour and a pleasure. I mean, I got to find it for a long time, so I care about helping the next generation. And I still speak to so many of them weekly, because they still want to learn this and want to learn that, because there's, I think, especially with the years, with 2 years of COVID or whatever you want to call it, there's a big gap in so many people's training because they wasn't competing. And everyone, so I've got one boy, Jack, who's 20, but he's still fighting like an 18-year-old or 17-year-old, because he's got all that taken away from him. And I think everyone's probably in the same boat for many style, whatever governing body, that because it got so much got taken away from them. And there's a generation coming through that they just need a lot more help, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely an honour and a pleasure. And I enjoy doing it. We've got a great team now with Leone and Saj just come aboard, and Mora and all these other coaches that have come along. And we just came second in the work of in Florence when he lost to Romania. They had so many more fighters than we did. It's like, we just come second to them is brilliant. And to beat Italy in Italy is amazing. Yeah, but we've got a really, really good sound team. And we're all on the same page, which is nice, because we're all very open. And work well together, which is what I like about the whole Crichton setup, is that we're like a big family in some way, which is quite rare, really, because you kind of get that in the club level, but you don't always get that when you go up at the international stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Go on.
I just feel very lucky. That's all. I try and appreciate it all. So try and make sure I humble myself every time.
Did you notice that there's any difference in your approach or mindset between being a club coach and being the national coach?
Yeah, I've got to watch what I say a bit more. Definitely, I've got to, it's a completely different thing, because especially even like talking about other people's styles and other people's katas and stuff like that, and some people quite focused on the kata in quite England, and other people just focus on the kumite, some on both. But I don't want to say watch my words, really, but because I wear my heart on my sleeve and I put my foot in it most of the time anyway. And I just say it as it comes out. I'm not really thinking about it too much.
Yeah.
But I just try and make sure that I'm fair. I think that's probably the big thing, is when you're teaching 100 people that all different clubs and things, a seminar here, there, whatever. It's because they all come different background, different styles. They always use different terminology. And it's like, a lot of people like to say a lot of stuff in Japanese. And this, I just talk in English, pure English. This hook kick, stamp kick, roundhouse kick, but just because I just think I want to keep it simple and try and get as many people to understand what I'm saying and get the point across. And most of the time, I get good feedback, I get bad feedback, I take it all on the chin, and I try and help people who need it. And some people need that little bit more help, because some clubs don't do much footwork and some clubs don't do enough sparring. I mean, we spar every week in our club. If you're not sparring every week, you're going to be behind other clubs, because you're not getting that bit in.
It's, yeah.
It's like, And
do you get to feed that back down towards clubs that you know you would like to see this?
Yeah, I'm very straight and honest. In fact, too honest probably. People tell me I tell them too straight sometimes. But I'd rather be honest and upset you and you move forward and tell you you're crap if I think you're rubbish.
Yeah.
Or doing a tight fist. What's wrong with people being they've got pads on, don't know how to wear pads. Like you just, I get a bit baffled sometimes. How these people feel like they're going to get anywhere if they're not even doing conditioning. We do a lot of conditioning in our club with knuckle press ups all the time to fingertip press, even back to the wrist press up as soon as you're 16. My dad's as is doing loads of stuff like that. So it's like you've got to condition the body and not worry about protecting it. And I even take the mickey out of some of my mates to do a bit of boxing when they wrap their hands up and wear their big gloves. It's like, you're going to wear them in a real fight. Yeah, it's like they're protecting their hands rather than condition my hands. What I've been taught, and that's what I love about the martial arts that we all do, is like we learn to condition the body.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's that for me, that was trying to tell people that. And most people, to be fair, are really respectful and nice. And for me, respect and loyalty and discipline is the main three things that I try and focus on. So I try and say they're rubbish in a nice way, I guess. By just saying, maybe work on this. but yeah, no, it's it's all good fun, mate. I love it all, and I think if anyone can take just one thing away from any seminar we do, I'm happy, because I've trained with loads of people in the past, and sometimes come back with nothing because I can't remember it, or I come back. Like when I trained with Christoph, because I've done loads of seminars with Christoph since I was a kid.
Yeah.
My dad's come back with 6 or 7 pages worth of notes on Christoph, because his style and his format that he's got is just unbelievable. And I think my dad was pretty happy with his format of training before, until we went to Christoph's first sort of main seminar in Poland, and where I think I was fighting with some Midlands or Southern England team, and we had a little competition on Polish TV, and then after that we watched his seminar. I was like, wow, he's unbelievable, I've got to get up and have a go. And then Christoph basically got me up and managed to do quite a lot of the seminar with him, and then we sparred and he beat me up for 20 minutes. So I was only 15, I think, or 16, I can't remember, but I was very lucky. We got on really. He's such a unbelievable fighter and coach, and he's such a nice geezer as well, to be fair, Christoph. He's a lovely bloke. We're still friends with him now. But I've been very lucky to spend a lot of time with him, and sort of I like the way he is with people. He's French, he's quite chilled out.
Yeah.
On some of the way he teaches and things, and he's quite laid back and whatever, where a lot of karate people are so serious, aren't they? And it's like, for me, that's just, I think, job's worth a little bit. Sometimes people go from being so too serious that I just got to relax a little bit and have fun with it. And that's what I learned a lot from Christoph, and going out to Nice. And I think I did 4 hours training with him on the first day in his dojo on like nearly 30 different ways of just doing 1-2. And I was like, I didn't even know there was that many ways of doing 1-2. So it was like, my legs were in bits the next day, and he's like, oh, another 4 hours, and I'm like, yeah, all right. I can't even walk down the stairs. he's a machine, mate. So hopefully I can get out to Senegal. He does a seminar in Italy every year. I want to go out and do it again. We used to do it all the time. So
I was going to ask you, I just noticed as I was like obviously reading through some of the information about you, gathering some of your bio, that's part of the Karate England squad. You've also got a development squad. And I was just interested in the process that development squad plays, I guess, from club to that squad onto the main squad. How does that setup work, and what's the focus around that?
What we try and do is we get them sort of fighting in all different local areas, medals, who can go to the next level. We're all quite good at working together with all the other coaches, because it's not like we're not very precious about going to that next level, who would be able to get a medal at an international or this one or the other. We're all pretty honest with each other, which is why I think it works so well, because we try and make sure that we don't throw someone in a deep end that they're not ready for. So we kind of keep them in their lane to which I think helps, which is why we've got such a good squad right now. And it's definitely... I think the key is we're all honest with each other and make sure that we help the right people go to the right competitions. And then once we're there, it's we'll coach each other's students. It's like if someone asks me to go and coach their students, they're busy. We just go and jump in for the chair and help that person out. And that's been a big factor, I think, with Ukraine, which has helped us a lot, especially the last couple of years, is we haven't just got our team and who's there at the top. We've constantly got loads of people coming through because we all teach pretty much full time. And we're all honest with each other. We're all honest with each other, and I think a lot of not sort of open up about things and maybe a bit precious because they've only got a few students where we're all pretty much full time, so we want the best for everyone. And it's like if my student's beating someone, then they're gonna say, yeah, put that person in, and if someone else is beating my student, I'm gonna go, look, he needs to go in. Who's looking in form? Who's the best for that girls' team? Who's the best for that boys' team? Let's put them in and make the strongest team. That's all we want.
Yeah, great.
So I definitely think it's picking and choosing the right competitions for the right person, which is not always easy. But if you're honest with yourself and not lying to the other coaches, that it can be done.
Yeah. What do you feel are some of the main obstacles competitors in the UK are facing versus perhaps some of the other top countries out there?
I think it's funding as well. A lot of these countries get their fighters are funded, so they can train a lot more. And it's like we haven't got to worry about having to try and find that GoFundMe page to get a lot of that money together. And we're very lucky in Croatia. Croatia gives a lot of sponsorship out to all the top fighters. I mean, they put out £10,000 to sponsor the team. So like everyone pretty much got paid for one of the trips. Was it a few months ago to America or something? I'm not sure. We only sent a small squad. And some people didn't take the sponsorship, but the ones that needed it, that obviously got a lot of help, which is good. But I think I don't think that always happens with everyone.
No.
In other organisations, and that's a big shame. The thousands myself to go and travel for it. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't. It doesn't make no sense to me. I don't know why people wouldn't want to get them funding and helping as much. So we're very, very, very lucky. It helps a lot of people want to come and join Croatia because they know they're going to get the help as well. Because not everyone can afford to do it. It isn't a cheap thing to do. But I think that's the first thing. And the second thing would be just sort of making sure that they are allowed to go and train and fight with certain people, because like some people could be a bit precious and saying you can't go and train with them, you can't go and train with that person. I'm not like that. I mean, I train with a Shaolin monk. I do Kung Fu as well as Croy, and I do boxing, and I do kickboxing. I love Thai boxing. Someone going to tell me I can't do that, I'll tell them to jog on. But I suppose it's a mindset of being able to go and train with more people. I mean, I even tell my students, look, if you can't go into a boxing ring and protect yourself and at least do all right with someone sparring, you can't fight, because there are too many karate people out there are teaching like a false confidence and thinking that they're not hitting each other, and then these people are walking the streets thinking they can defend themselves. So for me, it's not, that's probably not just an English problem, that's probably a lot of karate people with problems, is they're not pushing them to go out and train with other people and learn as much as they can, and then compete more, because there's a lot of people now that don't train enough. So they think 2 hours of karate a week's enough. Yeah. I used to be a kid, we used to train 6 to 7 days a week, and then still worry that I weren't doing enough. It's like they have a different mindset nowadays. I think this whole generations coming through have got so much more to distract them, not just social media, but they've got like football, rock climbing, MMA, boxing, karate. They've got so many different clubs now that they're just getting distracted by other things, and that's not helping them, because I remember training every day and still thinking, oh crap, I'm not good enough, I need to do more. And I think that'd be the next thing, getting them to be more dedicated. And a lot, not saying, and they're not, because I've got other people, I've some students who do 5-6 days a week. I have got those, and a lot of people have got those. And I think if you're a fighter at the international level, they're already the dedicated ones. So it's just maybe coming through the younger generation, maybe, is what I'm kind of talking about, I guess, because you ain't going to get to an international level if you're not dedicated anyway.
Yeah.
But Yeah, there's a few. I think there's loads of problems, to be fair. Everyone's got. We could be here for days. That's probably just the first two.
Yeah, sorry. I'll try one more question with the, as the internet seems to be getting worse. Just what?
I'm still here. I'm still here, mate.
All right.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
What are you? Have you got any major goals for next year, 2023?
Yeah, we're going to take a big squad to Dundee, I think, and we've got a competition up there, which would be good. And I just want to beat the Romanians, really.
Yeah.
Which is my biggest thing right now, because in Wukev, they're probably the strongest. So beat those, and with the karate side of it, I've got a whole new generation now. I've got two of my students who are doing really well. Keep them sort of go from the junior level to the senior level, but just try and enjoy it really, and just see what else we can get out there and do some of the more full contact stuff, because that for me that's going to be the key. I love karate combat, what they're doing, and I think it shows a lot of people that right, they can do some kicks, but they can't actually do kicks with power and knock anyone out. So it's certain styles that are not working in that, and others that are. And good luck to all the English guys doing that. I've got a lot of respect for all of them, to be fair. But yeah. Be nice to get someone into that. We've done some other little full contact stuff, but that'll be because you've got those guys that are coming through that want to just fight. They don't want to just do points. Sure. So it'd be interesting to do more of that really for next year. And there's some talks about doing some stuff with a few different people that I'll tell you next time.
Right.
About setting up full contact stuff, but I get people call me all the time about things, so it's just making it all happen really, and bring. Yeah. I'd like to bring more people together and get this whole get the England sort of karate all. I speak to everyone in WKF that I've always spoke to. Speak to people in IKU, speak to people in WKF, and it's like a lot. Everyone in my generation wants to get everyone together, and it's like that'd be nice. My dad's been trying to push that. He's gone quite lucky. He looks after the politics side of it most of the time, and allows me to do what I do. But it'd be nice to get everyone sort of on board, because it just makes life easier. And I think that would be, especially for English karate, if we was like the Americans, they're all together. Like, yeah. They don't separate any of the two. I think that'd be a big factor. We could kind of get our generation to do it. I don't see why we couldn't. But I'm sure a lot of people can think of reasons. But I don't see why it can't be done. It can't be done for next year. There's been loads of meetings going on, and we just got to make sure the right people sort of turn up, I guess. And that'll be my thing. I'm going to keep pushing until everyone can just be open and free to do what they want, because I don't see why it shouldn't be like that anyway. It just seems stupid to me if you've got any other mindset. It just seems stupid. If you've got a mindset, I just think you're being an idiot. Let people go do what they want, and then everyone will be better for it. It's that simple. But then I'm not in charge, am I? So it doesn't mean what I think.
Dan, that was great to talk to you. Sorry about the internet at the end there.
Yeah, no stress.
It's been a real pleasure.
Good to have me on. Thank you, mate.
No, absolute pleasure. I'd love to get your dad on as well, and I get all three of you. Maybe on at the same time.
He'll jump on. That'd be funny. He's everyone thinks he's a bit serious. My dad's hilarious.
I'm sure he is. All right, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your time today, Dan. All the best to you and your club.
All the best, mate.
Thanks very much.
Take it easy and open up your new clubs as well, man. All the best.
Thank you. Cheers now.